public hanging. Yes, I know. Everybody, welcome to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. And I got a couple of interviews and an hour of news and your calls coming up today. Starting off talking about the drug wars with Bruce Mierkin. He's the communications director from the Marijuana Policy Project. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, glad to be here.
All right, well, let's get started with the Supreme Court's decision this week. It was California versus Raich, correct?
But it was technically Gonzalez, as in Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General, versus Raich.
Oh, I see. So I'm sorry. I thought this was originally a state case against her. My bad.
No, this was a case brought in federal court by two California women, both patients who use medical marijuana legally under the laws of the state of California, who felt that they shouldn't be subject to the possibility of arrest and prosecution by the federal government. So what they did is they brought a case originally in U.S. District Court, and eventually it found its way all the way to the Supreme Court, in which they argued on a number of grounds, and the issue that became the central one in both the appellate court and the Supreme Court ruling is what's called the Commerce Clause. The federal government's authority to regulate drugs comes from the provision in the Constitution that says the federal government can regulate commerce between the states. Well, these two women said, you know what? There's no interstate commerce here. We are growing and using medical marijuana completely within California, using California seeds, California soil, et cetera, et cetera. We're not selling anything. Therefore, the federal government has no jurisdiction. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with them, issued an protecting them from arrest. Unfortunately, Department of Justice didn't want to take that lying down, went to the U.S. Supreme Court with an appeal. Just a few days ago, the Supreme Court handed out a ruling in the government's favor, 6-3, saying that, yes, the federal government does have the right to prosecute these patients even if they're obeying state laws. I want to mention very clearly that the court did not strike down state medical marijuana laws. Those are all absolutely in full force and effect. This simply maintains the status quo, where these patients are not, unfortunately, completely protected from the possibility of federal arrest.
And that's because of the Supremacy Clause. National government
the Interstate Commerce Clause, which they, although I think a lot of people would disagree, the court has now found gives the right to the federal government to regulate a lot of conduct that sure doesn't look like interstate commerce to me, but which the court found can, quote-unquote, affect interstate commerce.
And again, the use of medical marijuana on a doctor's prescription is perfectly legal in the state of California and has been since when?
Since 1996, and there are now a total of 10 states with laws along those lines.
There's also a lot of different cities and localities within states where they don't have state laws but local ordinances and stuff too, right?
Indeed, and I'm not sure that I would be able to remember them all, but some of the newest are in the state of Michigan, Detroit, and Ann Arbor, and there's several others as well on the city level.
I remember when the District of Columbia had a referendum, the Congress took their money that they wanted to spend on counting the ballots after they had been cast.
Well, indeed, Congress intervened. It's particularly sad that the residents of our nation's capital have about the same democratic rights as Iraqis under Saddam Hussein. A court injunction eventually required them to actually count the votes, and we learned that the Washington, D.C. Medical Marijuana Initiative passed by about 2-1. But Congress has succeeded in blocking that law from ever actually being put into effect in our nation's capital.
Well, and they do have absolute supremacy over the 10 square miles there. All right, everybody, this is the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with Bruce Mierkin. He's the communications director of the Marijuana Policy Project, and we'll be right back. right, everybody. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton talking with Bruce Merkin from the Marijuana Policy Project. And we're discussing the Supreme Court's recent decision in the Raich case upholding the power of the national government to prosecute people who smoke medical marijuana even on a doctor's prescription, even when they live in a state where that is perfectly legal to do. And you referred before, sir, to the Interstate Commerce Clause and how even though this on its face doesn't have anything to do with interstate commerce, somehow the court has decided so anyway. And I thought maybe for a little bit of history's sake, they referred back to the case of Wickard versus Filburn. And people probably remember from high school history class that when the Supreme Court found the vast majority of the New Deal unconstitutional, Franklin Roosevelt threatened to expand the number of justices on the court to, I think, 16 or something, where he would have all his own appointees go up there and decide that everything was constitutional. And the Supreme Court, they actually didn't succeed in packing the court, but the court did cave in under the pressure, realizing that they're basically facing the overthrow of the Constitution. And so they compromised, and they decided in the case of Wickard versus Filburn that even though this guy was growing, this guy was under arrest, he was prosecuted for growing wheat and feeding it to his family and to his livestock. And they said that, no, you're not allowed to grow wheat. We have strict central regulation of wheat. And he said, this has nothing to do with interstate commerce. I'm growing wheat and I'm feeding it to my family. And they said, no, because you know what? A grain of that wheat could have blown in from across a state line somewhere or something. This is basically the decision that the majority on the court last week invoked to justify their continued prosecution of medical marijuana users. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's sort of the central ruling in the history of the Commerce Clause, although there have been other cases, including more recent cases in which the court has nibbled away at the federal powers. Interestingly, Justice Scalia, who's one of the people who's in those other decisions.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, your phone cut out there a little bit. Can you repeat
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's a call waiting, I guess.
Justice Scalia, who is one of the justices who decided in previous cases on restricting federal powers under the Commerce Clause, went with the majority to maintain federal authority this time. So we do see some somewhat strange bedfellows occasionally. What's interesting, though, is even as they were saying that the feds can go out and prosecute patients, Justice Stevens, writing for the majority, went out of his way to tell Congress that it's time to change the law. And that's really a rather remarkable thing. Given that the case was decided strictly on the Commerce Clause issue, they didn't really have to say anything about medical marijuana at all. But Justice Stevens did. I want to read just this one sentence from the ruling. He said, "The case is made difficult by respondents' strong arguments that they will suffer irreparable harm because, despite a congressional finding to the contrary, marijuana does have valid therapeutic purposes." And he went on to say that the patients in this case and their supporters can be heard in the halls of Congress. And I'm not aware of a situation recently, at least, where the Supreme Court has so directly, essentially said to Congress, hey, folks, you got a dumb law here. It's time to change it.
Well, the funny thing is here, they have so many decisions after 230 years that basically whatever it is they want to do, they can go back and pick and choose whatever decision to justify it kind of after the fact rather than the previous precedents compelling them to act. As you said, where Scalia, in the cases of Lopez and in Morrison, the recent cases where under the 10th Amendment, they said they struck down the guns in near schools federal law and also the federal law that made it where people could file civil lawsuits for having their rights infringed in rape cases. In both of those cases, they stuck up for the 10th Amendment, struck those down, and then, as you said, the very same justices are turning around and going back and invoking Wickard versus Filburn to hold up the exact opposite principle. They can just pick and choose, basically, depending on whether they like pot or not.
Well, you know, it much as the Supreme Court would like us all to believe that these are pure distillations of the law and the intent of the Constitution, clearly these are human beings with beliefs and prejudices and to some degree perhaps a desire not to rock the boat of decades of precedent and decades of a war on drugs. What's interesting is that at least one of the dissenters, Sandra Day O'Connor, went out of her way to say, had she lived in California, she wouldn't have voted to make medical marijuana legal. Yet she felt that this was, in fact, an unreasonable exercise of federal power. And then on the other hand, you have Justice Stevens saying, you know, yes, the government has the right to do this, but I really think they shouldn't. So I think we do actually, in at least to some degree, have some principled opinions on both sides of the issue. Although, Scalia, I got my doubts about, I got to say.
Oh, Scalia, he has principles. Didn't you read all his speeches about how the state is God's representative on earth and it's his job to carry out God's will? Yeah, they put the transcript of it in the New York Times a couple years ago.
Well, you know, if God is speaking to Mr. Scalia, you know, we may all be in trouble.
Right. So, in fact, I had a friend who went and watched the Supreme Court in action just a couple of weeks ago, and he said he got the impression of Scalia that he was a very charming guy. He just really liked his character. He thought he was really great the way he did his stuff up there on the stage.
Well, I mean, well,
it's surprising to me. I imagine him having like a black halo over his head, you know. But.
Oh, maybe he only wears that at night.
Yeah, okay. Well, so you guys at the Marijuana Policy Project, it's your assertion then that it's okay for some reason for someone to smoke pot?
Well,
that sounds crazy.
Let me ask you this. If you are being treated for cancer and you're having chemotherapy and you're throwing up for hours straight, wouldn't you want to have something that relieved the nausea and made you stop vomiting?
Yeah, but didn't the government figure out a way to put the pot in a pill so that I don't have to hurt my lungs?
Well, you don't have to hurt your lungs to use natural marijuana, first of all. You don't have to smoke it. There are very simple devices called vaporizers that allow you to inhale the active components without the junk and smoke that you don't want in your lungs. So smoking isn't an issue. The fact is that there is a pill called Marinol, which contains one of the components of marijuana, a chemical called THC, which is the main component that's responsible for making you high. It is, however, not the only component involved in the therapeutic effects. And although it does have some benefits for some people, it's got a number of drawbacks. One is it simply doesn't do all the things that marijuana does. But even when it works, it takes more than an hour, sometimes as much as 2 hours to work. It's absorbed very slowly and unevenly because when you take it orally, it's processed in a completely different way by your body. And a lot of people report that it just makes them too stoned. You have much less control over the dosing. When you're smoking or vaporizing, you can take a puff, wait, you feel the effects within about a minute. You know instantly if you need more, if you've had enough, whatever. The pill hits you in an hour or a half or so, and sometimes it hits you like a freight train, and there's not a thing you can do about it, because you're going to have that in your system now for a number of hours.
And pardon me, sir, but I think you said that the major purpose of this was to combat nausea. Now we're asking people to swallow a pill and wash it down to combat their nausea. How's that supposed to work?
Well, indeed. And, of course, that's nausea isn't the only thing it's used for, but it's one major reason. And you're right. If you're nauseated and throwing up, simply keeping a pill down may not be possible. So there are a lot of drawbacks to the pill. It's useful for some people. And, you know, if you can use something that's legal and not going to get you in trouble with the cops, by all means, do it. But our question is, what about the people for whom it doesn't work?
What about the people who say that really you're just providing cover for those who would like to just go ahead and legalize all drugs, and that you're just basically a nice spin for the libertines?
That's plain nonsense. There's no polite way to put this, and I would invite anybody to listen to Angel Raich, who's the plaintiff in this case, or many other people who've come forward. Montel Williams, a television talk show host, has talked quite eloquently about how marijuana has helped the pain that he experiences from MS when even the most heavy-duty narcotics haven't helped. The fact is that physicians right now, today, are allowed legally under federal law to prescribe cocaine, morphine, and methamphetamine and that has led to exactly zero push to legalize those drugs for recreational purposes. This is a completely phony issue. It's the sort of thing that the habitual drug warriors bring up when they don't have actual facts on their side.
The government actually even prescribes and provides marijuana to some patients suffering from Agent Orange disease and such, correct?
Well, they do. There is a program that was actually started around 1980 called the Compassionate Investigational New Drug, or IND, program, which provided medical marijuana to a limited number of patients. The first Bush administration closed that program to new patients back in 1992, but they kept providing marijuana to the surviving patients in the program. There's seven of them still alive, who every month get a little tin of pre-rolled marijuana cigarettes from the U.S. government. So we have seven patients who are legal, given their marijuana by our government, even as the government is telling the rest of us, oh, no, this isn't medicine, this is a scam.
I'm looking at a page on your website right now. It's mpp.org/arrests. And it says, new marijuana arrest record. And the line graph here, I can't believe it. At first, I thought, oh, well, this must be going way back in time. No, no, it goes, it's only 9 years represented here, from 1991 to 2000, an increase from 250,000 arrests to 750,000, half a million more arrests since 1991 this year. We'll be right back on the Weekend Avery Show.
Son, leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. And yeah, this graph here, this is from 1991 to 2000, so I don't even know what the numbers are for 2005. But in 2000, there were 750,000 pot arrests. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah, the latest figures available are 2003, which the number reached an all-time record of about 755,000. To put it in perspective, that's like arresting every man, woman, and child in the state of Wyoming, plus every man, woman, and child in the city of Rochester, New York, plus about 25,000 more people.
My goodness. And that is part of the total of roughly 2 million people incarcerated in the United States right now, 7 million on parole or probation or some form of paying their monthly rent on their liberty to the system.
Indeed, and of course, we have an awful lot of people incarcerated for drug offenses of various sorts, including marijuana. And I do want to mention, though, that coming back to the question of arrests and what can be done now in the context of this ruling, since the court said that Congress can act, in fact, the Congress is going to have an opportunity as soon possibly as Tuesday to step in and stop the Justice Department from arresting patients in states where medical marijuana is legal. The appropriations bill that funds the Justice Department is about to come to the House floor. And when it does, a pair of members of Congress, Maurice Hinchey, a Democrat from New York, and Dana Rohrabacher, a Republican from Southern California, are going to jointly propose an amendment that would say to the Justice Department, you cannot use one dime to interfere with or undermine the implementation of medical marijuana laws in the states that have them.
That's great. And you said that's going to the House floor when?
It will be brought up on the House floor probably on Tuesday, it's looking like now, when the appropriations bill comes to the floor. And if people want more information on that, Please go to our website, which is MPP, as in Marijuana Policy Project, mpp.org, and right in the center of the page there, you'll see a couple of links that will take you to information about the ruling and about what we're doing about it, including this vote.
If I can make a slight recommendation, I would suggest, I mean, if all you can do is make a phone call to your congressman, that's great, but what really works well is faxes. Because as they pile up in the office, people have to walk around them and that kind of thing, whereas emails and phone calls aren't necessarily taken that seriously. People should not have the impression that putting pressure on their congressman means nothing, because that's really not the case. I mean, the fact is, these guys, especially in the House, they have to be reelected every 2 years, and they very much, all of them, want to be reelected.
And, you know, it's funny. This is one issue where I think that the politicians, certainly people in Congress, are perhaps more detached from public opinion than anything else I can think of. National and local polls consistently, year after year, show support for legal access to medical marijuana in the range of 70, 75, 80%. And yet, it's very difficult still to get people in Congress to vote for a simple measure to protect patients from arrest in states that have already decided they want to do this. And they just really desperately need to hear from people. They need to understand that it is not dangerous politically to vote for this.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's so confusing to me. Honestly, this is the first interview I've done on this show, even about drug policy, really, at all. I mean, maybe I've touched on it in smaller detail, you know, as a subset of different interviews. But for the most part, the drug war has been off my radar screen. I figured out how bogus the drug war was when I was in ninth grade. and you know, here I am 15 years later or something, and I'm over it. I'm tired of having this argument. Does anybody really believe that you can stop people from wanting to get high by kidnapping them and locking them in cages? It doesn't work. People always get high. They always have. They always will.
And yet, it has become a sort of a sacred cow in Congress. You know, being tough on drugs is considered to be the politically safe thing. And they're still afraid of being, quote-unquote, soft on drugs, when it's clear that, at least on some things, the public has moved beyond that. Clearly, the public understands that the idea of arresting sick people, for God's sake, people with cancer and AIDS and MS, for using marijuana if it relieves some of their misery, that's just crazy. This, you know, you can argue about other aspects of drug policy. This one's a no-brainer.
I'd have to agree with you. It makes good sense. All right, so tell everybody all about the Marijuana Policy Project, how they can contact you, and all that good stuff.
Sure. The Marijuana Policy Project is based in Washington, D.C., and we're the largest national organization focused on reforming our marijuana laws. And the simplest way to get in touch with us, again, is to go on to the web, mpp.org. There's a bunch of information on the website, and you can sign up for free email alerts that will let you know when a legislation is coming up, either in Congress or in your own state. And please do it. Get involved, because the only way we're going to change these laws is if elected officials hear from the folks who vote them into office.
Absolutely. Just as you were saying, they believe that it's the politically safe thing to always err in favor of more drug war. And they must be made to see that actually the politically safe thing is to run on a platform of I promise to repeal laws when I get to D.C. That's what I want from my congressman.
Hopefully all your listeners will tell them too.
All right, and everybody remember, that's Tuesday. The appropriations bill for the Justice Department is going up, so get in touch with your local House member as fast as you can. Thank you very much for your time today. Bruce Merkin, everybody. And we'll be right back with Anthony Gregory on the Weekend Interview Show.